This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, the campaigns have been vigorous on both sides, and both sides are on high spirits.
That's David Awarawo, Professor of International Relations and Strategic Studies at the University of Lagos, with his thoughts on the upcoming American presidential election. Details coming up. Also, we will talk with the founder of a platform set up to help immigrants integrate into American society. And polls have opened in an election in Botswana. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Early voting in Washington, D.C. began last Sunday, with voters casting their ballots ahead of the November 5th general election. VOA's Anthony Labruto is standing by to give us a look on some of the specifics of this process, as he voted for the first time in the nation's capital. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Anthony.
Hi, yes. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about the voting process in D.C. and your voting experience as well.
Absolutely. So voting in the United States Capitol has been a really easy process. And I can speak with that exact experience because I am voting for the first time right in this area. So I voted before in my home state of New Hampshire, which is kind of far north in the United States. And so I will be registering to vote here in Washington, D.C. at the same time as I will be filling out my ballot. So the process, or the two processes, is fairly simple. So I'm inside my local voting center, which is normally a recreational sports center that has now become a voting precinct. But I go in with my proof of residency showing that I live in Washington, D.C. So in this case, I have my rental lease agreement right in hand. The election workers will then give me a form that says, you know, I swear I say who I am and that I'm not voting anywhere else. Fill out that form, give it back to them, and that's when they give me that ballot. And so I'm in the gymnasium right here, and I walk across to an American flag draped area, and that's when I make my decision.
So, Anthony, does D.C. voting process differ from other places in the United States?
Absolutely. So Washington, D.C. is a bit of a unique place in the country in that it's not a U.S. state. It's a territory. And so what that means is votes for president, votes for federal elections aren't factored into the nationwide totals, and then haven't been since the founding of the United States. So this is the same way for a few other places in the U.S. too. Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Guam, they're all territories within the United States that elect their own local governments and pass local legislation but aren't taken into account at the federal-level elections. So in this case, for general election, back to my ballot, I have two separate ballots that I will be handed. There are two separated portions of a ballot, depending on if I'm voting electronically. One that shows the options for federal offices, which contains that all-important question, who should I pick to be the next president for the next 4 years? And one that includes the local issues of electing local councilors, commissioners, and if there's any citizen initiatives that people would like to see councilors address.
So with this...
Go ahead.
With this early voting, Anthony, are there any trends being seen about voter turnout since you are there? And does it appear there's more voter participation this year than in the past year?
Absolutely. So before we were setting up here, I just spoke with the local site coordinator here at the Sherwood Recreation Center. And she told me that foot traffic in this particular location has really been about the same. But it should be noted that Washington, D.C. passed a law in 2020 during the coronavirus pandemic that sends every registered voter within the nation's capital automatically an absentee ballot. So what they can do is they can fill it out at home and then mail it in instead. And so, unfortunately, we won't know those exact numbers for early voting itself until probably after the election. But that law of the mandatory absentee ballot will certainly affect the number of in-person voters coming here to vote by paper, by electronically. We're still in the middle of the day here for the election itself, but there's a steady stream of people coming in, but not an overwhelming amount like we probably expect to see once the workday ends.
Early voting in Washington, D.C., VOA's Anthony Labruto briefing us with the specifics of this process. Thank you for your input, Anthony.
Absolutely. Thank you.
In Iyob Waldahana, founder of Ethio Diaspora Hub, located in the U.S. state of Maryland, talks to me about the platform he has set up to help immigrants integrate into American society. One of its features concentrates on U.S. politics, with a dedicated page that guides and helps naturalized citizens utilize their vote.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. Ethio Diaspora Hub is a platform that is dedicated for helping immigrant community to be able to help them bridging the gap in the information gap. Basically, what this platform does is it will equip migrants to have a better decision capability by way of having the right information at the right time. So this platform is really important for anyone. You can be here in this country for 1 year, 10 years, 5 years, or 20 years. But at any point in time in your life, when you are about to make any kind of decision, you can have somewhere that you can refer to that really focused on immigrant and immigrant life. So on this platform, we have divided the platform into different six different life phases of an immigrant, which are the arrival and settlement stage, and you have the integration stage, and the third stage is professional development stage, where you want to educate yourself to have a better income and improve your life. And the first stage of immigrant life is when you start to make long-term decisions, like buying a house or making a big acquisition. Finally, we are going to settle, where we're going to have family and start building the community. That's where the fifth stage of immigrant life stage coming. So throughout all these stages, having the right information for you to make informed decisions is very important. That's why Ethio Diaspora Hub is there for immigrants to be able to help them to make this decision.
Arrival and settlement, integration stage, long-term settlement stage, and then family and community building stage. After all that, they have now settled in America. They will be equipped with the power of the vote. How does your organization help? How do you guide them into the American system of the vote?
So this is a really great question, because if you happen to see our platform, we have a dedication section where we teach our newcomers, starting from the addressing system. You come to this country, you're new, so you should start, where you are, describing where you are, the addressing system. We start from that basic knowledge of, how to integrate to the society. I mean, one of the systems here in the U.S. is the political system. So we have a dedicated section on the platform to teach, to educate newcomers to be able to know how the political systems look like. Specifically coming to, this election season, we have a dedicated page educating the community, showing them where to go, where to vote. All this kind of information is very important for the immigrant community to, make their voice heard. Right now, our platform is viewable by 1.6 million visitors. On a daily basis, we have a traffic that's coming around 10,000 every single day. So imagine that, having this kind of visibility on the platform is very important for us, to educate them. We have this dedicated resource that shows, for example, the type of voting, in-person voting, the absentee voting or mail-in voting, or if they want to know their registration status, the deadlines. So everything is already organized and, put on the platform so that they can really make that informed decision. So the platform is really big. Like I said, a lot of visibility is in there. And we're also very much work closely with the Montgomery County to be able to educate the county. It's not only the Ethiopian diaspora community that's helping, that's using this platform. Our platform is also visible by the immigrants from the Chinese community, French, Korean, Spanish, and Vietnamese community. So it's really this community that we are helping to be able to, provide the right information for them to make a decision on this election.
That's Ethio Diaspora Hub founder Iyob Waldahana. He talked to me from Silver Spring, Maryland. A survey by the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, showed that Muslim voters favor Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party in the swing states of Arizona, Michigan, and Wisconsin, while Vice President Kamala Harris leads among Muslim voters in Georgia and Pennsylvania, and Donald Trump leads in Nevada. Overall, CARES survey revealed that 29.4% of American Muslims plan to vote for Harris of the Democratic Party, virtually tied with Stein, and Trump of the Republican Party garners 11.2% of the vote. Khalid Turani, executive director of CARE in Ohio, explains to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi the reasons behind these findings and the issues that determine the Muslim American voting.
These findings indicate the total dissatisfaction of the Biden-Harris administration, especially if we compare that number to the voting in 2020 when it was Biden-Trump, when 80% actually of the Arab and Muslim Americans voted in the state of Michigan for Biden. So when you drop from 80% to 29%, that means something went wrong. And the something that went wrong was that total isolation between the Democratic Party and its base, especially among Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, and the progressives. That's one thing. The other is that their desire, the Democratic Party and the Biden-Harris administration, to continue to support the Israeli genocide against the Palestinians, Trump, no pun intended, prompts their desire to win the elections. We told them over and over again, on many, many occasions, you have to call for a ceasefire. You have to call for a permanent and immediate ceasefire. And they are thumbing their nose at our community. And our community, just like we punished Hillary Clinton when she lost the state by 10,000 votes, and when we rewarded Biden by giving him 80% of our votes, when over 100,000 Arab Americans, Muslim Americans voted for Biden, now we're going to punish them again.
Michigan is a critical swing state. Recently, a Muslim imam endorsed Trump, while another prominent imam called the community to vote for Harris. Does that mean Michigan Muslim voters would reconsider a protest vote trend or abandon the uncommitted approach?
I don't believe we are abandoning the uncommitted approach. I think the abandoned Biden that have become abandoned Harris that later on transformed during the primary elections to voting uncommitted is going to continue to be the trend until November 5th. And I believe many in the Arab American community are going to vote their conscience and they will not vote for either party. So with that said, I believe the endorsements that whether Trump or Harris garnered from some imams, I think these are outliers. If you notice, there's no council of imams that have endorsed, no groups of imams have endorsed. It is just one imam in Hamtramck and one other imam somewhere else in the state who endorsed this candidate or the other. But overall, the community, like the survey showed, the community is going to vote overwhelmingly in comparison to 2020, is going to vote for a third-party candidate, whether Jill Stein or Cornel West.
You indicated that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is the top priority issue for the Muslim Americans. What other issues that Muslim American voters would base their voting on?
That is as a priority. Other priorities, I think the economy and health care are some of the issues that are a concern to the Arab American and Muslim American communities. And with that, you can find some diversity. So, I mean, you find that some Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, you know, lean to this party or to that party. Their concerns about Muslim values and family values and how the policies, are they consistent with people's sensibility and their paradigm in terms of what is important to them in terms of their faith and their communities and societies. And I think you'll find that some of them, because of that, are going to vote Republicans. Some. But I think some will vote for family values and lower taxes and better economics. And some are going to vote for more liberal values and human rights and women issues and the abortion and so on. So in that regards, I think our community is as split half in, like basically smack in the middle between Republicans and Democrats. I believe our community is no different in that regards.
Khalid Turani, executive director of CARE in Ohio, was speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. In March, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the human rights situation in Gaza and the West Bank told the UN Human Rights Council there are reasonable grounds to say Israel's war in Gaza has met the threshold for genocide. There is a case before the International Court of Justice demanding that Israel halt its operations in Gaza, and the ICJ earlier this year called on Israel to protect civilian lives. U.S. President Joe Biden has pushed repeatedly for temporary and permanent ceasefire in Gaza. The war, which has claimed about 43,000 lives in Gaza, began in October 2023, when Hamas militants in Gaza attacked Israeli communities, killing about 1,200 people and taking more than 200 hostages. Neither Israel nor Hamas have agreed to halt fighting long term. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America, and should find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorites, VOA and radio and TV programs, and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. A Nigerian international affairs expert says Africa has a lot to learn from the campaigns preceding the U.S. presidential election. He says the two frontrunners, Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump, have been campaigning on issues they hope will convince Americans to vote for them. He says, in some parts of Africa, candidates do not campaign much, and they should campaign on issues to deliver clear messages to voters. David Awarawo is a professor of international relations and strategic studies at the University of Lagos and heads the school's Department of History and Strategic Studies. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about campaigns in the U.S. and their lessons for Africa.
Well, the campaigns have been vigorous on both sides, and both sides are on high spirits, each side thinking that it stands a decent chance of winning the election. They are moving around from one state to the other, especially the swing states, where their figures are showing that they are very close, in fact, in virtually all the swing states. So the campaign has been vigorous, it has been as expected. And importantly, too, especially on the Democratic side, we have had some prominent politicians campaigning in support of Kamala Harris, especially. We have had Barack Obama in Wisconsin just yesterday campaigning and drawing attention to why Americans should vote Kamala Harris. Trump hasn't got so many people supporting him like that, except maybe Elon Musk and a few other very rich businessmen in the United States. So the campaign has been vigorous as expected, and we're expecting some October surprise. We haven't had that. So what that means is that it is how much the Americans accept the messages that the different parties are presenting that will determine the outcome, and not some extraneous factors sometimes have when we have October surprise.
As an international affairs expert, I'm sure you've been following the campaigns. What are some of the issues or topics that have dominated the campaigns? And then any lessons for Africa from the campaigns so far, sir?
Yes, the issues that we expect will dominate have dominated. The economy has been a central issue. And of course, one will expect that the economy will be by voter in the campaign, and it has been all through. Immigration has been a major issue. Of course, we've seen sometimes chaos at some of the borders, and of course, so many people trying to make it to the United States. The two parties have different ideas regarding how to manage and attend to the immigration issue. It is central to the campaign. And of course, some other social issues, abortion rights, and all that. But the key issues have actually been the economy and the immigration. Of course, on foreign affairs, we've had different ideas regarding some global issues, the war between Russia and Ukraine, the war between Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza, and of course, in Lebanon. All of these things have, you know, featured in the campaign so far. But of course, the economy and immigration seem to be the dominant issues that both sides have attempted to explain what their positions will be were they to win the election.
And then, sir, the other aspect of the question, any lessons for Africa, are there any lessons or issues raised that concerns Africa?
Yes, there are lessons. First, lessons on how the campaigns have gone on. The parties, of course, the two front runners, the Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, know that the extent to which they're able to present their messages persuasively to the American public will determine whether they win or not. That's a lesson for Africa. In some parts of Africa, we have had some individuals who don't campaign much, and they're hoping that maybe they will give money on election day, or they will change figures, you know, when the votes are cast, as a way of winning the election. So that's the lesson, that votes will count, and that the more you're able to present your message as persuasively as you're able to present your message, as clearly as you're able to present your message, and then making people make up their minds to vote for you, will determine whether you win or lose. That is key, and that is how, that's what democracy is about, you know, making people see reason to vote for you, and that determines whether you win the election or not. That is the key lesson that Africa must learn, that we must imbibe the democratic values, and that should determine, you know, how we go about our democratic experience, and not the other way around, where sometimes you have violence, election rigging, giving money to buy votes and all that.
That was David Awarawo, a Nigerian international affairs expert, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye by phone from Lagos, Nigeria. Polls have opened in an election in Botswana, and voters are deciding if one of Africa's longest ruling parties stays on for another five-year term. The Botswana Democratic Party has been in power in the Southern African nation for 58 years, since independence from Britain in 1966. Today's election will decide the makeup of parliament, and lawmakers will later elect the president. President Mokwetsi Masisi, a 63-year-old former high school teacher and formerly a UNICEF employee, is seeking a second and final term. According to the Associated Press, Botswana has been held up as one of Africa's success stories as a stable democracy, but is facing new economic challenges that have pushed the ruling party to concede that policy changes are needed.
Americans and people around the world are watching closely as the race for the 47th President of the United States unfolds. Voice of America is your trusted source for comprehensive coverage. From daily updates to in-depth analysis, our correspondents will keep you informed every step of the way. Tune in on radio, TV, or online as we count down to November 5th when the results are announced. Stay informed. Stay with Voice of America.
Senegal's navy says it has intercepted more than 400 irregular migrants in the past 10 days departing from the coast of the West African country. The navy said on social media that a patrol boat picked up 183 people from a long wooden canoe known as the pirogue on Tuesday off the western village of Djifer. The French news agency AFP says the vessel was the second in a week to depart from Senegal's Saloum Delta, a network of channels, islands, and mangrove swamps inscribed on UNESCO's list of World Heritage. A boat that left the delta carrying 230 people, would-be migrants, was intercepted off the coast of the capital Dakar over the weekend. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.